Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 322 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
And we're back after a little hiatus, a little summer break for Trevor and I. You know, the kids get summer break. We should too, I think. Yeah, since we're children at heart. Let's talk about what we got on tonight's show. That is Truly Trivia, or Trivial Trivia, I should say, because it is truly trivial. And we have some things to talk about here, like summer's slowdown at the turnstiles there. We also have Josh Brolin and James Cameron in a bit of a feud. Shia LaBeouf coming out with some surprising news about Tom Hardy. And Antonio Banderas bulking up for his new role. We'll discuss that along with reviews for Valerian, Dunkirk, Sharknado 5, Cafe Society, the latest Alien film, and Colossal. Also, our streaming online picks and a slew of trailers on tonight's show. Got a lot of stuff. So we're back. We got a good show hanging with us. But first, let's do this trivia. Have you watched this Glow on Netflix?
I have.
What do you think, first of all?
It's good, but it takes a while to get started. It's a slow burn, so it's kind of a bit too drawn out.
Are you surprised that they renewed it for season two? A lot of stuff there's getting the axe. And that,
no,
that...
not for the second half of it. It's really good.
Just took a while to pick up. So you got invested in
it. Yeah, it just takes
characters.
A long time. Yeah, I mean, once they actually get into the meat of the story, and really the whole thing is just leading up to the first show that they do, and actually that show, which is really just in you know, the end of the last episode. So it's not, it's like all about them kind of building up to that. So there's a lot of thumb twiddling, you know?
Ooh, thumb twiddling. I thought that was only going on in Orange is the New Black.
Oh, no. There's a lot of...
Well, then you might know the answer to this trivia question, because it is based on... You don't? Okay. I don't know if that show then is based on the actual history or if it's just all fictional. Is that supposed to be...
Well, that's a good question. I have no friggin' idea.
Well, leads me to believe
I mean, I think that
this.
Some of the people are real. I do know that, so maybe it's all real, but I don't know. I think they are taking a lot of leeway with it.
All right. Well, which megastar's mother was a founding member of GLOW?
Yeah, I don't know.
No surprise. Stallone's mother, Jackie Stallone, was a founding member of the Glorious Ladies of Wrestling.
So was she a wrestler, though, then?
I believe she was, and I think that's where Stallone has said he had like this kind of fascination with wrestling, and that's, you know, why he knew about Hulk Hogan and all these kind of guys growing up and watched it pretty frequently. I think it was his mom was a wrestler herself. That's a little sketchy, but I know she was a founding member with the group, and she was touring with them. I don't know if in a promotional capacity or if an actual wrestler, but I found that to be
Well, this doesn't even get to that point, so she might not. So maybe she's not in it yet. Until they actually get, because like the show was just had, as far as the show goes, the wrestling show in it had just had its first television appearance, right, by the end of that, of the first season. So maybe when they go on tour, as you say, maybe when it picks up and stuff, now that it's proven, I guess, maybe that will be season two. Maybe she'll be in it. I don't know.
Well, that is one of the shows that will be around next year, so look for the season two of that. Let's talk about this summer's slow turn down at the box office. You know, forecasters, pundits, they're all talking about a 13% decline from last year's already somewhat lackluster summer that was saved in the end by a big last quarter with Star Wars. And this year, the highest grossing film domestically is still Beauty and the Beast, something that was released back in March with a $175 million opening. That's now at over $500 million. The next closest thing we have is Wonder Woman at $400 million. My question, or kind of what I'm going to propose to you, is they say sequels are a healthy revenue stream for the box office, and particularly for summer. It's been for a long time. I think now that we've gotten so deep into these series and into these multiverses, they're actually off-putting to people because you don't want to go back and invest the time. For instance, I was thinking about watching Fantastic Beasts, but I don't want to – do I have to go back and watch 9 Harry Potter movies to get acquainted with that
thing.
One?
I did just watch that too.
So
maybe I'll talk about that in the reviews for you.
But do you think that that's the case, that if people miss the last entry, you're not willing to jump into a Pirates 5, a Transformers 5?
No, I don't believe so, because these things are very episodic. I mean, with Fantastic Beasts as well, it has nothing to do with Harry Potter. As they start doing these spinoffs and things, they make sure to, and even when you look at the Pirates and stuff, these things are episodic at this point, right? I mean, this, even the superhero stuff to a lot of degree is fairly episodic, and a lot of people go, I know my parents, I drag them to superhero movies every once in a while. They don't watch that shit. They do just fine. You know, they don't have a problem with it because it's just bunch of noise and everything. The movies are self-contained, even though they have, mm-hmm. you know, overall arcs that go through several movies. I don't know that it's necessarily imperative that you see the other movies to understand what's going on, you know?
Okay. Well, this is the second thing I'm going to throw at you then. I personally think this is what the case for this summer was, is that they threw too much too early at the screen. In successive weeks between the beginning of May and the end of June, you had everything thrown at you. I mean, mm-hmm. we had Baywatch, Alien, same weekend. The Mummy was thrown into that group. You're talking about Pirates in that. Everything was certainly – Transformers comes out. And everything that does moderately well and doesn't really perform. And now we have this huge gap where something like The Dark Tower last weekend can – be number one with $19 million at the box office. You telling mm-hmm. me that The Mummy couldn't have slotted in there, that Baywatch couldn't have maybe been a late summer fun film? I mean, we have nothing in August now.
But they weren't good. They wouldn't have done well, so I don't know.
They would have. I feel like they would have done. I feel like there's a lot of cannibalization that went on in the beginning of the summer, that there was no breathing room for anything outside of your Wonder Woman. And
maybe,
and really,
but I mean, isn't that more of an issue of just bad movies?
Bad movies are bad movies.
I don't know that. Yeah, even if they came out in at the end of summer, I will agree with you that having all that at the beginning of summer just kind of kills the whole mood for you, because that's a lot of bad shit all at once.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is disheartening, to be honest with you. And I saw a lot of those films in the theater, as did you, and it kills your. As much mm-hmm. as seeing a Spider-Man or a Dunkirk can make you want to see more movies, going and seeing a Baywatch or The Mummy can just fucking kill your movie-going spirit, you know? Transformers 5, you know, give it what you want. It's just that kind of stuff just does – it does the industry, it does nothing any favors for that kind of shit. And they talk about video on demand and all this premium stuff and how it's going to kill things. No, it really won't, because people don't want to watch that shit at home even. It's still shit, you know?
Yeah, no, I do know. I've, you know, not been a fan of the straight-to-streaming releases really either. I don't think that slate is as strong as they want to pretend that it is. And, you know, I think that Netflix coming out and starting to cancel things just proves that is not actually the case, that they're not, you know, sitting home and streaming this stuff. I mean, it's hard to find a fucking movie worth a shit at this point to sit down and watch. And I've seen some pretty damn horrible shit that I wouldn't normally watch, but I refuse to pay at this point. You know, I've been spoiled for so long. I refuse to pay outright to see anything. So that's why I think that, like, the Disney streaming stuff is interesting, because that's really what they should do. That's really what it should come down to, is that they should all have their own streaming thing that I could pay, you know, the $8 a month or whatever, and watch whatever they release, and hopefully something good.
I don't think it's a matter of money. Honestly, for me, I think it's a matter of actual time, because everything is so long, and now you're throwing in previews. I mean, your average film now is 135 minutes. You're throwing in 15 to 20 minutes of preview, plus parking, plus driving. It's a 3 to 4 hour block out of your day to get just shit on.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to watch something that's that shitty, I'd rather watch it at home where I can disengage from it very easily. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm trapped there, I feel like a lot of movies this summer are like being trapped on a shitty fucking roller coaster, or being at a house party where a guy is just telling a story and won't shut the fuck up, you know, and you can't get out of it. It's just like, it's the worst feeling when you're stuck there, and you know – I mean, we'll talk about Valerian later, but this is not uncommon for me this summer, is to look at my watch and see that we're about 45 minutes into something, and really getting a sense of dread that I'm, you know, latched to this seat now for another 90 mm-hmm. minutes while this thing goes through its paces, and I'm on the outside looking in. So the summer, I think that the overall feeling here is that this has been extremely lackluster. Some even Pixar's offering of Cars 3, lackluster business. Everything is down. Your average movie, really a hit right now, would be about $130, $140 million. You can say that did pretty good. But with these budgets, you can't say that. And they're relying way too much on foreign, which is going to come crashing down. So the seismic shift that was predicted, 10 years ago was a little late, but it is coming. It is coming here. And they just wait for these Star Wars movies to bail out the box office at the end of the year. Thank God for Disney. It's like we're in World War II era.
I guess. I mean, everyone has their movies that they have to come out with. This is just it happened to be a bad year for releases. I don't know what they're going to do next year. It certainly makes you start to wonder. I keep getting excited for movies and continually let down. It's at what point do you give up?
Well, we do have James Cameron coming to rescue our box office woes with the next Avatar sequels, which were be here sometime in the next 100 years. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I'm alive to see these things by the time they fucking come out. Hopefully James Cameron's alive to finish them. And recently Josh Brolin has become somewhat of a cause celebrity again with his casting in the Marvel films, both as Thanos and as Cable now and the Deadpool 2 sequel. But he has some interesting things to say about James Cameron. Did you read this article? Do you know about this?
I read some stuff. I don't know what interesting things he had to say other than...
Well, I just thought that he just basically told people that if he doesn't want to do a fucking Avatar movie, he's not doing an Avatar movie. And James Cameron was really upset that he got a no from this guy. And maybe James Cameron doesn't realize that these movies... That's a hell of a commitment to do 3 or 4 fucking movies on top of
he already had
that
commitments. I mean, I think that was the real reason that he couldn't do it. And so then apparently James Cameron went around and badmouthed him, and he's like, well, fuck, come say it to my face. It's not like what's he supposed to do about it? He can't do the movie.
Yeah, I would actually agree with Cameron in the sense that Brolin would fit perfectly in with that Stephen Lang kind of military-esque, hard-ass.
I agree.
So I get the wanting
military type look,
which is kind of
strong guy,
strong jawed, very jocular and things like that. So I get what the overall casting is for, but Cameron's probably not used to hearing no. It'd be like if you told Woody Allen no or Scorsese, they probably would just shit themselves.
I think people sell Woody Allen and Scorsese no probably a lot too.
My God, I mean they'd probably die then they have to tell them no though. Did you hear about Shia LaBeouf and Tom Hardy's problems on Lawless? Did you read this article?
Well, 5 years ago when it happened, yes. Is there
something
new?
Did you remember reading about this?
Yeah, I remember this was a fairly not a big deal that wasn't a big deal. That's what I remember.
The word on
the
street is that little shy over there packs a wallop and apparently knocked out Tom Hardy on the set.
Well, and that's not true. And the director's already said that didn't happen. It didn't ever came to blows. And the thinking, I mean, Tom Hardy's the one that said that he was knocked out. And the thinking was that it was tongue in cheek. He was joking like as if Shia LaBeouf could knock him out. So the director's already come out and said the director came out and said that it never came to blows. They were restrained before, I guess, they really got into an actual fight or a physical fight.
LaBeouf was obviously very drunk on that set, which he has admitted, and he's had his problems since, but that was a particular time when he was extremely.
And Tom Hardy's probably not a guy that will put up with shit,
And he's not an easygoing guy either. Look at his problems he had on the set.
They're both very get into their characters and they're very artsy in that sense. So I can understand that these two guys would butt heads, right?
Oh, you throw Christian Bale in there and you got a fucking fire.
You'd have a real problem.
You got Sean Penn and Christian Bale to that mix, and that's uncontrollable. It's the Expendables of thespians. But You know, I just thought that was an interesting thing that surfaced once again because LaBeouf's in the fucking news for
it keeps coming up. Like, you, I remember when it happened. Obviously, that was 5 years ago or something like that. And then people kept asking about it, you know, because no one really knew what happened. And someone asked the director at one point, and he said it was nothing. I don't know how long ago that was.
People were fucking morons, obviously, when it comes to movie stuff. I had a guy the other day try to tell me a quote-unquote film guy, because, you know, they find out if you ever mention you have anything to do with film, everybody wants to throw fucking knowledge at you, you know. And this guy goes, you see Dunkirk? I said, yeah, I saw Dunkirk. So it's a Christopher Nolan movie, you know that, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah, I caught that with the credits even before I saw that, but regardless.
Who? The Christopher Robin movie? What?
That, you know, because Tom Hardy's in it, and you know that every movie that he does with Christopher Nolan, he, like, hides his face. And I said, what do you mean, like in Batman? Batman, and like in this, he's a pilot. And I looked at him and said, what about in Inception? And I swear this guy totally forgot Tom Hardy
was in Inception. Yeah. And without hiding his face, by the way, totally face viewable.
He just kind of face first that conversation, and I never got another. The guy never said actually another word to me the whole fucking night. So I don't know. And then he went off to IMDb if he was in it.
Fuck you!
Fuck! Don't ever come to this party again. Fuck this guy!
I'm gonna hit him again. I'm gonna look for something good now.
Who brought the fucking ringer? Oh man, yeah, I'm just the asshole just correcting people's trivia, then going on and doing fucking Stallone trivia on my show, but. Now, regardless, speaking of Stallone, we got his ex-co-star here, Antonio Banderas, who was in Assassins with Stallone back in the day, and he was in Expendables 3, really great in Expendables 3, I thought. Jolt of energy in that one. Fun. But he was not necessarily bulked up for that role. He was kind of thinned out and lean, and recently he had some health issues, as having a heart attack, and he was on an emergency landing on a plane where he was rushed to the hospital and had a minor heart attack, they said, about a year ago. And since then, it looks like Stallone might have been talking to Banderas a little bit. He's in a movie called Security where he plays – it's basically Paul Blart in a real action setting here. He's a security guy, diehard-esque. They take over the mall. He's the ex-cop, fallen hero, ex-military guy. Now he's a mall security. Did you see the trailer for this or any images from this movie?
No.
He is fucking jacked, and there is no way – at mid-50, Antonio Banderas is getting that fucking thick, Marky Mark fucking swole, without the little Stallone juice.
Little help there, huh?
And he's got the rub, the clear cream that Barry Bonds was doing back in the day. It's obviously very legal for these guys to do this stuff now, especially being over 50, is TRT, testosterone replacement therapy. Statham does it. States that he does it. It's not technically illegal anymore because they can get these anti-aging therapy clinics and stuff. But, you know, good for him for doing what he needs to do health-wise. But I don't know how smart it is for someone that just had a heart attack to put on that much muscle mass. But if you don't believe me, watch the trailer for Security. He even grew a beard to kind of just to not show how big his fucking
to hide the fat.
And someone fatty else face. Recently had a little – had a little run on the TRT and has had some head shapement disfiguration, in my opinion, is Mel Gibson. After he got real big for Expendables 3, if you look at the shape of his head and his hair growth, it's a little peculiar. Even in Daddy's Home 3, you can kind of see.
I just enjoy that you're out there looking at the shapes of people's heads and faces and keeping in the know of who the hell is on some sort of enhancement drugs.
You want to know who's on some fucking enhancement drugs? And this isn't being a hater. This is somebody who has a knowledge of diet and working out and the whole thing. Any of these fucking actors, you can tell me Hugh Jackman. They're not acting.
Any of them.
You're Zac Efron's. You're Dwayne Johnson's. They, granted, they're dieting like crazy and putting in work and working their asses off in the gym, but they're all getting a little help because you're in your 50s. You're not fucking gonna you have muscle memory and it's in your DNA at some point when you put on the size and you can put it on again easier. But you're Hugh Jackman, you're 50 fucking years old. You shouldn't be deadlifting 400 pounds. You know, you got a little and do it in 4 or 5 month span, you know. So
well, he might want to be Wolverine again.
Yeah, well, good for him. Hey, if you're getting a $20 million paycheck, do what you got to do. Look at Taylor Lautner. He got on the little kicker there and made a quick little buck, and now he's gone. And I think somebody sent it a picture of him recently. If you haven't seen that guy recently, just Google that image, and you'll see what I'm talking about when they get off of it. But they've all had the little kiss. I mean, going back as far as Nicolas Cage with the Con Air era. I mean, all that stuff. So I'm out there, and I've got my eye on you fuckers. You're not fooling me. I see you, Marky Mark.
They're just a house of cards, huh? Just waiting to deflate.
No, I mean, good for them. It's all legal now. It's just hilarious that like they go, oh no, you know, we just worked on the diet. We just did this.
It's probably really hard for them. I mean, really, with you think about how things used to be, you could, you know, 80s and 90s, you could probably get away with actually not doing that stuff. But now, like, it's just required of you to have a certain body type for every movie that you do. Mm-hmm. And the time between shoots is probably pretty fucking short now because these guys work like mad. Don't you think it would be really hard to do this without this?
To prove your point, let me just give you this example. You look at Chris Hemsworth in The Heart of the Sea, and then you look at him a few months later getting back into Avengers role. It's not that easy to go down and up like that.
No.
So I mean, there's so many cases of that. Look at Chris Evans and something like Gifted, and then he's back as Captain America. So, don't even get me on the Marvel guys. I mean, Ben Affleck, I mean, look how bloated he looks at some point in when he's – particularly there's a shot when he's coming down the elevator shaft in Batman versus Superman when he's walking into the Batcave. And he looks extremely puffy in that suit, like bodybuilder big, but almost like too juiced big. You know what I mean?
I feel like he gets a lot of help from that suit, though. Even in his first appearance as Batman, there, that suit.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a bit much.
It is. It's a little.
it's got some padding in there, don't you, buddy?
All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back with some actual reviews.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Tansky.
And I'm Dan Fogarty.
Together, we host the Title Pending Movie Podcast.
Title Pending is a weekly show where Tank and I get together and go over what's going on in the world of movies.
Each episode, folks and I take a look at the biggest new release of the week and discuss the weekend's box office data.
Then we pick a topic to discuss in depth, from top tens to current issues to subjects that tie in to that week's new releases.
We always do our best to entertain and enlighten, so come and check it out. Good times and good films.
Check out the Title Pending Movie Podcast.
Available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and everywhere that quality podcasts are found.
We got a bunch of reviews.
I'll tell you what, our podcasts are found on those same venues, and we are not quality.
Everyone's podcasts are on those.
Don't listen to that podcast. It's crazy. Podcast. Back us.
There's too many podcasts.
There is, and we're just another one out there. We're in the echo chamber. Can you hear us? Can you hear us? We know you guys can hear us because you've been hitting us up on our Facebook page. Thank you guys for your support still. We've been gone for a while, but we are back with a bunch of new reviews. Starting with, I want to talk about Trevor's guy, Luc Besson, his latest opus that opened and closed in America within
this,
3 weeks.
You try to say
talk
this
about Valerian.
This is my guy, but there have been plenty of times when the tables have been turned and he's been your guy and not my guy.
I like the Taken movies a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not so much of a fan of the Taken stuff, but I think that we both agree that this is, you know, and I'll begrudgingly say that it's a steaming pile of shit, right?
Wow, yeah. It goes on my worst of the year list, I got to be honest.
Yeah, it won't go on mine because even I can't get this out of my mind. I don't like everything that he does, but this movie's weird for me because there are moments in this movie where I'm like, God, this would be an amazing movie. This is, and there are moments that hit, and I just think, yeah, this is good, and then immediately like there will be a little piece of dialogue or something will happen. I was like, fuck, this sucks.
I would say most of the dialogue, 90% of the dialogue is terrible.
Oh, good. Yeah. There's not a lot of dialogue, though.
The stunt casting from Ethan Hawke to Clive Owen to Rihanna is useless. They're all utterly.
It's all story problems. I mean, that's what this movie has, right? Its biggest hurdle and issue is story problems, and flow is just a huge issue with this. The flow on this, to the three separate openings of this movie, And the worst, there's three openings, right? There's the main, the like the title
montage,
sequence,
which is beautiful,
which is fantastic and gives you a good idea of how the City of a Thousand Planets was created and all this stuff. And you think great.
Yeah,
and then there's,
but it's also a tease that the movie's going to be good. And then it goes into that weird alien thing.
Then you have the alien thing. It takes, which is just too long. Right. And so the flow gets fucked up because halfway through that, you're like, what the fuck is going on? Why is this important? What am I watching?
Which they don't explain
and
to you for
finally,
90 minutes.
Well, finally they get to that the end of that, and that ties into the third introduction of this movie of Valerian here and Loreline, and it's just like their opening is like the worst opening of all three of those. Like what
By
the
that
fuck?
Point,
it is
I was
so pointless.
Already disinterested. Oh. I was getting disinterested in his acting, Dana DeHaan.
Yeah,
Dane DeHaan. The kid, I'm sorry, the guy bugs the fuck out of me. He looks like DiCaprio's methed out little brother. He's got the biggest bags under his eyes. He's not a particularly good actor. He's always sweaty and clammy. He's built like he's in a fucking movie from the 1960s, you know, like a beach movie from the 60s. He has like no physical presence whatsoever. She's mediocre for somebody without a lot of talent. I mean, the best you can say is that she's better than like that Emily Ratchevik, you know, the Blurred Lines chick that's been in a couple movies. It's about like the best person you could, you know, worst person you get besides her.
I don't know.
I
didn't have a problem
itself,
with the casting.
I hated their
I
relationship
both of
with
them.
Each other. I thought the ingenuity, though, in the creature design, in the world around the story, it was all in the edges of the frame, was all where all the hard work went. And it was like they just, the dialogue. I mean, you can have Star Wars dialogue where it's all meant to propel you from one sequence to the next and stuff, but this. This was
it's not
so
even in
bad.
This one. Doesn't even have that. I mean, this has like the whole idea is that these people are supposed to be in love, but not wanting to deal with it. You know,
not at
if
all.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but
and
maybe
it just
underlying
doesn't work at all, ever. Not even once in this entire movie. It always comes off in some other way, and really, it's so. Like demeaning to Loreline through the whole movie, and it almost feels like a sexist thing because he's essentially sexually
playboy.
Harassing her through the
yeah,
whole
he's
movie.
He's a playboy who's fucked all these chicks,
which,
and you know, which is a strange thing to add.
Okay,
in that story.
Yeah, it's okay because she likes it, which is fine because that really is the line, you know. And so, like that kind of that would normally work. If you understood why she likes this guy, why the fuck does she like Valerian? He is just useless and an asshole and has no redeeming qualities in this movie ever. Not once, not one fucking time.
Yeah, it's a terrible movie. I mean, honestly, it goes on my worst of the year list and apparently doesn't make yours as of yet, but I think you might want to reconsider that at year's
no,
end.
No, it won't. I'm going to desperately...
You're gonna watch this
watch
four
this
times.
Again.
I'm gonna watch it until I love it.
Just yes, I will. I am because it's so. It's like it's. Oh, it's almost there. I've said this to you.
There.
It is almost there because, realistically, this feels like a third movie in a series. It doesn't feel like it's very kind of episodic. It's not.
European. It doesn't even have an American
needs,
structure. It's all over. It explains itself way too late in the game. It thinks you have the good. It expects you to have the goodwill to fucking follow this thing through chases for about an hour, basically and essentially a chase for
well,
an
it's
hour.
It's not hard to so follow. I mean, it's
no,
not.
I mean, it wants you to go on this thing and just have the goodwill of just saying, okay,
right. This is what I'm saying. It's not. This is a very episodic thing. It's like a third in the series, right? So it's almost like a throwaway one. Like I'm missing the first half of who these people are, and then after this, I'm missing a real ending. You know,
it's too much. I think he was too close to this material. He loved it way too much to adapt it. And
yeah, picked the wrong story to adapt first of all for a first movie, and then just did not do it very well. I'm interested in these comic books, but I've read as well. Interestingly enough, that the English translations of these is really poor.
Mm.
So
well,
I thought, well, that
likewise.
Is interesting because I tell you what, it's a problem with the movies too.
Well, then maybe it's a crystal clear adaptation.
Yeah, perhaps it's fantastic. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Sharknado 5, which is obviously the fifth in the series that's been a huge boon for sci-fi, for Asylum. And even though it was the most tweeted thing during its time slot last Sunday or during its premiere, garnering more tweets than Game of Thrones. It ultimately settled with about 1.88 million viewers in its initial run, which is off a full 1.1 million from last year's high. This is the lowest premiere since the original, but these are still well and above anything that sci-fi typically airs during their slot. So they're most likely will be a continuing of these series. And we both watched this last week during its run, and I gotta say, I like these movies. It's hard to say, but they've gotten to the point of lunacy so far over that, you know, when I really decided I liked this, it wasn't when they were ripping off Indiana Jones and James Bond and Star Trek. It was when fucking Geraldo Rivera showed up to fly the Hindenburg 3000. I was like, I just like this stupid shit.
Well, it's definitely a format. I mean, it's down to, I mean, as you say, all the people that show up in it, and you're like, oh, that's this guy. And they're literally on just long enough for you to say, oh, that's Geraldo. Oh, that's, you know, so-and-so. I don't necessarily remember. There were a bunch of people in this. Yeah, Lieutenant Uhura. There was, I don't know, all kinds of people were in this. I think Clay Aiken was in this at one point. I don't know. It's ridiculous.
Chris Kattan was in this.
Chris Kattan is in this, yeah. He's actually in it quite a bit.
Clay Aiken and Chris Kattan are damn near the same person at this point.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah. But it's there's so much fun. They know that they're fucking dumb, you know. And I really like the way Ian Ziering is just comes off as like a pompous asshole in real life anyhow. So it's like perfect casting because he takes it so seriously that it works. It makes it even better. Like he doesn't know he's in a bad movie. And I love the way they introduce all these characters and everything. And he's like the badass guy and everything. It's just so much fun to see this because I used to watch real movies that were just like this that did take themselves seriously and they were fun because of all the silliness.
This is the closest thing we have to that Corman era, getting a name in there and throwing it around. And look at how much cinematic influence is in this from the little jabs here. And it's actually a treat for people who like movies. It's not. And they've come a long way with this. I think they've gotten actually better as they've gone along. I thought last year's was probably the best one with the Force Awakens out of the series. But they have come a long way. If you go back and watch the first one to where they are now, the special effects are still shitty, but they're as good or where they need to be, to pull off some of these things, you know, like when Finn rides the Sharknado. And tell me the structuring of this when they had the title sequence 20 minutes into the movie. I mean, my God, this movie's all over the place. The sheer lunacy that they get away with these things is just fun. And I actually come to look forward to them each summer. And I will. I mean, if they're going to make 9 Saw movies, they can sure as hell make 9 of these. So it is what it is. I look forward to them. Yeah, and then they make money and people talk about them and they are getting to be a little less novel, I should say, with people, especially when they air and they no longer are the...
Well, because they're the same thing over and over again, you know. I mean, honestly, they are.
Yeah, but they've done a lot with this concept, I'll say that, and they've really stretched the shit out of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like you say, it's a once-a-year thing. I don't go back and revisit these ever because what's the fucking point? But I'll watch a new one every year if you want to throw that on. I can waste 2 hours on this.
Oh, they've stolen 10 hours of your life, sir. And many other people's.
I want it back.
Let's move on. And let me tell you about Dunkirk real quick here. I just caught this one last week. And I got to say, I know I told you this over the phone, but I'll state it for the show. And that is that it's solid. It's maybe spectacular in spots, but it's not excellent. It's not. It's not.
Yeah, so it looked like.
It's a contender for – it's definitely going to make – my best of the year list, I'm sure, but I don't think it's the best movie of it's a very small story. There is
well, of this year though. Does that help it quite a bit, huh?
But you know, there's some strong trailers we'll talk about too that I think might have some potential. But I do think that this movie has a couple story flaws that are a bit glaring and hard to swallow thematically with what it's trying to do otherwise. I'll talk about this more in depth with you when you see it later on down the road. And I'm sure during award season, this will still be around. So it'll be a relevant conversation. But leading to that, I would say this is a strong, 3.5 stars out of 4 because of the fact that visually this is damn near a silent film for the first half.
What is the theme? Is there a major theme? Because I know Christopher Nolan, he loves to do this. There's got to be a major theme that he hits, right, you know, over and over again.
Yes and no.
Is there finally a movie without one?
This is almost, I don't want to say non-linear, because that wouldn't be the right, it's almost silent. It's the closest thing you're going to see to a mass hit that's a silent film since, you know, that artist movie that came out. Right. That wasn't even that big of a hit, but that was an homage. This is more, you know, the Battleship Potemkin and things like that are cliched to even respond to, but it's almost like that, like those early films. This could have easily been shown 1942 without the special effects they did, and people would have understood this story. And it's good that they casted all famous people in this, because I couldn't even tell you the names of people. There's, you know, maybe the pilot, because you hear it often when they're communicating, but the soldiers don't particularly have names. They're somewhat faceless, which maybe that's the theme, you know, the faceless soldier just trying to survive the beach. But it does. I just didn't care for, there's a boy on the civilian boat, and that whole thread with Cillian Murphy does the film no favors, and I'm gonna leave it at that, and we'll get into it more when you see it. But worth seeing, and absolutely worth seeing in the theater because of the sound design, which I think this is a strong contender for at least technical aspects of editing, sound effects editing, and sound design, because that thing pops, and on more than a few occasions I jump from it.
And but of course it'll be competing against Transformers 5.
Right. Which was just
as always, right? Yeah. Exactly. Sound design, Transformers 5.
Thank God. You know, Oscar winning films. Okay, let's talk about Cafe Society. This is the Woody Allen film, right?
Yeah, I've been wanting to watch this. I finally pulled the trigger on this, and I am not happy. This is not a good movie. Everything that they've been saying about this is true. It sucks.
I had hopes for this one. This had Emma Stone, right?
Oh, no. This has your favorite girl. What's her
name?
Not
Hathaway.
No, Kristen Stewart.
Oh, well, it's not. At least it's not Anne Hathaway.
It's not Anne Hathaway. It also has, what's her name? Blake Lively in it for, yeah.
Well, that is
a little
girl.
Bit of time. Yeah, she looks fantastic in this, but she's hardly in it.
But old cheek biter Kristen Stewart is not my favorite actress.
Yeah. Well, the problem with that, Steve Carroll's in this. I said that weird. Steve Carroll is in this, and obviously, what's his face? Eisenberg. Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesse Eisenberg, yeah. And so, of course, it's got a great cast. It's Woody Allen. It's a 1930s period drama.
Yeah,
but...
yeah, I mean, you know, here's the problem. Jesse Eisenberg obviously cast to play the Woody Allen role. It's too Woody Allen. I mean, to a degree where it's like you're not Woody Allen, but you are Woody Allen. So this doesn't work. The other problem that this has, which I typically can be overcome, but both the Steve Carell part and really any of the male parts here are so overly Woody Allen. Like you can just hear his voice in all of it so much, and they're all doing this weird period like 20s like talk and stuff that it just feels so fake. It feels like everyone's trying so hard except for the female cast, who and I don't know why. I mean, maybe Kristen Stewart just is so bad that she can't fit into the time period or whatever, but little intricacies and things that are totally Kristen Stewart come through and make it seem more real, whereas like Eisenberg feels like channel Woody Allen, you know, and it doesn't feel right. It doesn't work. Not to mention the fact that the story and plot is just so mundane and so fucking stupid, and really, it's such a La La Land idea as told by, you know, Woody Allen, and it just doesn't work. Like it's so down. Like it's such a downer for no reason, and. It just doesn't work, you know. And Blake Lively, they waste her. They basically take her and just use her as like a faceless person, you know. And she's not bad. She's not good. She's nothing. She's just enough to where you don't feel bad that Eisenberg's character kind of fucks her over. But you also don't feel necessarily fantastic that he stays with her, you know, or anything like that. And you don't really feel bad. I mean, the whole idea is the Eisenberg and the Stewart character find each other, right? And then they're torn apart, essentially just randomly because they chose to. It's a very La La Land in that sense. But like in La La Land, you know, they find each other. They basically just decide for no real good reason that they're not good for each other, and they go off and do their own things. And then they, in La La Land, they see each other again. And that's this movie. That's the whole thing. But it's just without all the goodness that is La La Land.
It sounds like a dog shit movie.
It's really, really terrible.
His movies are hit and miss always. Really terrible. That's what it is. It's always a year in, year out situation with him. And he throws them away. I mean, that's as far as the story sucks. He doesn't spend that much time on the story. It's always dialogue. And what does he have to say after all these years? It's amazing he still does these movies.
This movie says nothing. I mean, this movie literally ends, and I'm not sure. It's just like it ends, and you think, yeah, okay. I mean, you didn't sway me one way or the other on any issue, or you didn't make me think about anything. You didn't really tell me anything. And these are all serious issues and things people are dealing with as far as like love goes and finding true love and all this stuff, and it just is just like not there, right? It just ends and you think, yeah, who gives a shit? God, why fuck is this a movie? Why is this a story?
Entire podcast right there.
Many times over. So yeah, I don't recommend this one. I've seen a couple of the other ones. I mean, the Emma Stone one, which was fantastic, Moonlight. Called Magic in the Moonlight, which is really, really good. And I would recommend that, you know, not just for her, but also Colin Firth in this. A Big Surprise does not play it like Woody Allen. He plays it like Colin Firth. So there really is like no necessarily Woody Allen-ish centralized character here. And it just plays better that way. Nothing. It's just a better movie in general.
I don't see them all anymore. There's too much to do. But I catch the ones that I, you know, Midnight in Paris and whatnot like that. So I'll catch them on the next round.
Or not.
I did see Alien Covenant earlier in the summer. Another movie that was released, I think, during that glut, and that rightfully died a slow death or a quick death at the box office, I should say, because it was not very good. I thought this was, once again, one of the worst films of the summer, if not the year. And really, to me, felt bad that Ridley Scott was aping himself here, copying himself and doing a carbon copy of something he's already done before and bringing nothing new or saying nothing new.
It just doesn't even push the plot forward, really. I mean, it's such a minor film. I didn't really understand what the point of this was. Yeah, I mean, the whole, you know, David, I don't know. This is the wrong story to tell, right? This is the wrong continuation. I'm just not interested in this whatsoever, and it doesn't really define the xenomorph stuff, you know, like how they were created and all this kind of stuff. It doesn't necessarily define that in a way that makes me really happy, nor very interested in knowing it. Once I do, yeah, it's like, really, that's it? This whole fucking thing, like, what are we doing here? Why is this movie smaller than Prometheus? Like, why isn't this equally as big or something else happening? Why isn't this
ambitious?
Well, I'll tell you why. Why isn't this like Aliens? Because that's really the follow-up you need, right? The follow-up to Alien was Aliens, and the follow-up to Prometheus should be something Aliens-like, you know? And while this had a lot of action in it, it was just too much of the other nonsense.
Even the action, the ending sequence with her in that that metallic thing, I forget exactly what it was very reminiscent of James Cameron's Aliens, you know, when she's in the forklift in Valley. And I thought, fuck, man, you're just, you know, we're running in circles here with a story. I mean, I was barely with Prometheus. At least that, though, in hindsight, had the ambition to talk about the architects, to have something new to say and try to.
It has fantastic characters with depth to them that when you go through it, you're like, wow, like I'm really interested in those characters and things. And so Prometheus, I really liked. I will admit, I didn't particularly like necessarily the alien stuff in Prometheus either, but I really did like the characters in that and thought that was interesting. And this movie, I felt, tried to do the same thing, but
this movie exists for one reason. This exists for the sequence, which is a boring ass sequence, by the way, where they get David talking to himself. This whole fucking movie is so that whole thing can take place, and they think it's this mind-blowing, I don't know what the fuck they thought they had here. How Ridley Scott sold them on making this movie in the end, which they think is this huge mind fuck and is so ambiguous, is absolutely
so obvious.
So far in advance that you're just waiting for them to tell you what you already know. And you go, that's it? I mean, this thing is just a bad movie altogether, and I don't understand how they're befuddled. They couldn't believe that it didn't do well, and the plans were scuttled for the next one. And
It does have its fans.
Of course it does. But
well,
so
might you ask Joe Rogan? Joe Rogan apparently loves this movie.
Oh, my God.
Let's figure that one out. I don't know how anyone could like this movie. I really found it incredibly boring. And I can understand, you know, why people found Prometheus boring, but this is boring on a whole different level.
It's small scale and boring. So I've seen this done better many times with cheaper budgets, and just it's not interesting at all. I was thoroughly bored by this movie and found very little to even gaze at and find appealing. It's drab to look at. It's dreary. It's depressing altogether, and it didn't say anything that was intellectually stimulating at all. And I think that it thought it was doing these art house type moves within a big budget film, and it was not.
Well, again, it takes forever for them to get to the planet.
Forever,
you know, it's just too much, you know.
And then James Franco's in it for a blink of an eye, and why is Danny McBride in this? And the main girl who has no charisma whatsoever is like, it's just all.
Well, nobody has charisma, and well, it's a Ridley Scott movie, so there can be no charisma, right?
I mean, we say that, but then again, you look at like Ridley Scott's did Gladiator, which broke Russell Crowe through.
And there's a lot of charisma in that, but I don't know. That feels more coming down to casting, right? I mean, I feel like Russell Crowe just in general, when Russell Crowe doesn't have charisma, he has charisma. He's just one of those guys, you know?
And there's a lot of Ridley Scott movies that have at least a something to it, but this movie is flat.
Yeah, but when you think about the big ones are typically, I mean, his stuff seems to be more like world building, right?
Yeah. I mean,
so I don't know. Maybe we just get lucky when Ridley Scott makes a good movie.
Well, you see this and then you see a trailer for Blade Runner 2049 and you got a different director who looks like he's doing a better job making Ridley Scott movies than Ridley Scott is right now.
I guess. I don't really even know. After seeing that last trailer for that, I've almost lost interest.
No, I'm more interested. I'm way more interested than I was.
I feel like I don't know.
Especially
this is just going to be the same shit. Really, I tell you, it plays like the Total Recall trailer, the remake to me. That's what that looks like.
No way! I think this looks good.
This is just going to be pointless. Oh, and then you followed me here. They followed you here. It's like, oh, son of a bitch, really?
I'm just stoked that it's just Harrison Ford chilling like he's like in regular old like 1990 movies, just chilling in a little t-shirt, just hanging out in the future. Everyone else is like nasty and dirty. Like, where the fuck did you come from? Where the fuck you been hiding, Mag? The Gap?
All right.
Let's talk about Colossal. This is the Anne Hathaway film that I had some minor interest in seeing just because it had a quirky concept, but I can't stand that actress, so I'll probably pass. Am I doing the right thing or should
I? She's fantastic, I think. I don't know. I disagree with you on
she has an Oscar
her acting
to agree
stuff.
With you.
I think she's very good. And this movie is a fantastic movie, I think, or really after all is said and done. It's so weird. And, you know, I have to commend the trailers for this movie because they do not give away the reality of what you're about to watch. You know, they give you an idea, which is this wacky, zany idea about
this. Is it a snuff movie? Because that's what I feel like you're about to tell me.
It's not. Well, I mean, kind of. Like, it's a very serious movie. And it is very dark. And I just find Jason Sudeikis is fantastic in this. Anne Hathaway's great. And it's just not what you expect. And I can't really. I don't want to give it away by any means. It has a great ending, I thought. You know, it's not really a twist ending, but it's definitely an intelligent, smart ending in which they use everything that they've previously set up. The only thing that's weak in this is how she comes to control the monster, right? Or how the monster comes to be. But it's not important, so it doesn't really matter. It's a small scene, and that's that. But it's funny, it's fun. Except, I don't know, it does things weird. Like she, you know, people die. And normally, in this is, you know, an action comedy, maybe sci-fi comedy. But people die and she's actually sad about it. And in such a way where you're kind of like, oh fuck, you know, people did die. That's crazy. And then you just don't expect that in this movie. You think it's all going to be fun and games.
Yeah. It was sold as kind of this quirky, funny comedy,
which it is all fun and games in a very demented, fucked up kind of way after a while. And so I really want everyone to see this because it's something that really pulls the rug out from under you. And to me, it does it in a good way. And it's a very surprising way. And I thought, wow, you know, not what I expected.
Now, what about American Fable? Is this worth watching? This is a Netflix flick, right?
This is on Netflix. It's not a Netflix.
Not an original?
Original, I guess you'd say. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd probably skip this one unless you got nothing else to watch. It's an interesting movie. It's about people living in the farmlands. There's people who have this farm, and they take this guy hostage who's an investor or a banker or something, but he's looking to buy up farms, you know, and people are basically losing their farms in this movie, and the banks are coming in and buying them up. And so they take this guy hostage in an attempt to leverage him for money.
Mm-hmm.
The little girl on the farm finds him, you know, she finds him keeping there, and they strike up a friendship, and her family's just kind of fucking crazy. You know, her parents are trying to deal with this, but they don't. I don't know. Like, her dad's a good guy, but the mom,
what's
especially
the
her brother,
is it worth watching,
are fucking
or is it
crazy.
This story sounds terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's
how
not.
How the fuck did you fall into watching this? First of all, that's really the story here. That's more interesting.
Well, it was the only thing on. I mean, there's really not
the
much
thing
to
on.
Pick
Netflix
from.
Netflix is 427 different new releases each day.
Oh, please. I mean, really, go through them. Go through them and look at it. Yeah, there's very little to actually watch on there. And it's not 400 every day. It's maybe five things come on.
Well,
12.
Three of those each day are new Steven Seagal movies.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they're new, but... I don't know. My big gripe with this movie is it ends without explaining anything. So, which kind of makes it not worth it, because by the time you're like, well, what the fuck? What's going on? Like, what is this? Who's like, what happens to this guy? What's going on here? What? How does this work out? You know? And then it just ends. You're like, oh,
it just copped
well,
out.
Thanks.
And,
yeah,
we ran out of time.
I watched this whole fucking thing, and you can't even tell me what happens. Thanks.
It's gonna be like this podcast. We're just gonna stop talking.
So that'd be my big gripe with this movie. Other than that, it's okay. It's an all right movie. You know, it's a small independent movie. I just told you what it was about. That's, you know, sounds like something you wouldn't go watch on the big screen. That's for damn sure. You'd be totally ripped off.
I wouldn't even watch it on the small screen. So I was trying to still figure out who's in this. Anybody worth note or just no?
Well, Kit Pardue. I know you love him.
Oh yeah, because he was such a stellar presence in Driven.
And I don't know. I didn't necessarily. I can't think of anyone else.
Well, after Kit Pardue, you don't need to. I'm sold.
Yeah, I mean, I do. You would recognize other people, but I don't remember their names.
I just wonder if they couldn't get a hold of Hayden Christensen or Chad Michael Murray.
Oh, yeah. Right. Good old Liam there.
Yeah.
Liam,
I mean, these people a little too busy. They say no. Okay, what else we got here? Take Me? What's Take Me? What you got here?
Take Me. This is a movie about a guy who specializes in taking people. But he takes them, you know, he does these faux kidnaps, right? He does it as like a therapy for these people. So he takes a guy who's eating a lot, who's overeating, takes him captive, and just... tortures him, well, you know, doesn't really cause him any harm, but tortures him in such a way as to make him not want to eat anymore.
Sounds like The Game.
Kind of. It's a little bit more of a comedy than that. Obviously, it's a little sillier than The Game. The Game's very good and obviously very serious.
Very serious, yeah.
And so he gets hired by this lady who wants him to take her, but it also wants him to, you know, slap her and do these things that he doesn't normally do. So he's, I don't know if I should do it. But then he winds up doing it, of course. And throughout the movie, you don't know if, I mean, here's the ploy, is that you don't know if he's got the right girl or not. Because she's playing and saying, you know, oh, you've got the wrong person. This is this and that. And he's trying to keep going like, oh, like, is she faking? But then like, oh, no shit. Did I actually get the wrong person? You know, and at one point they actually team up because and they're like, you know, he lets her go because he believes this, you know, that he's got the wrong person. So they team up. And it's just a constant back and forth of like, if he's in control, he takes her and ties her up, because then he's not sure anymore. But then she gets in control, and then he's like, well, fuck, maybe I did get the wrong person. It's not, and it plays out like that throughout the entire movie till the end, when it actually tells you what's going on. It's okay for an afternoon watch, but again, it's not a great movie.
That's kind of an interesting concept, at least. More shit shows than the other one.
And I like that it doesn't... I mean, it plays with you right up to the very end. Like to the degree where it you almost get... It's like, fuck, you know, this is too much. Like, figure it out. Which I think is interesting. I don't know. There's not a lot of movies with balls that would just keep doing that, you know? So, it's an interesting watch.
Slight
recommendation. You got nothing else. This one's... it's all right. It's an interesting movie, at least.
Is Kip Part doing this one too?
No, this is that Pat Healy guy.
Pat Healy. Who's Patrick Healy?
He's doing independent stuff there. He had a movie came out a couple years ago called Cheap Thrills that was pretty interesting about, it was kind of...
Yes, I do recall that one.
If you remember
yes.
that with the rich couple or whatever who were paying money to these guys to see what they could get them to do.
Kind of
was constantly getting worse and worse. Yeah, so another interesting take. You know, it's almost kind of like Bobcat Goldthwaite type stuff. Like weird, like...
Uncomfortable.
Like something that's just... Yeah, that's a little bit off. Or something like they're just trying something a little different, you know? So it's interesting to watch movies like this.
What do you got for a streaming online pick? What are you choosing to throw out there?
I'm saying Wet Hot American Summer 10 years later. And if you didn't see the first one, either, or the movie, watch all those immediately. They are absolutely hysterical, I think, and just fucking so weird, yet so intriguing. And it's weird in a way that it continually pushes forward. It just pushes right through it. You know, so the minute you're like, this is so fucking weird, what's going on? It's already on to the next thing.
And I only saw the film, like, so that. You think I'd be lost? Do I have to go back and watch the first series to get this one?
I would watch the first series.
Yeah.
Because, well, yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff that happens in this, you need to see the first series for. But again, the first series is equally as good. I mean, you have people who are clearly very old here playing, you know, decades younger. And it's just silly. It's just fucking weird. But they do explain it all at the end of this series. They explain everything, or why it's so weird, at least. And I thought that, well, that's a nice touch, you know, that at least you take me back and ground me back in reality when all the weirdness is over.
Yeah, I will check this out, because I've always had, I love the cast. I mean, Paul Rudd is one of the big guys.
Yeah, the cast is fantastic.
I mean, Bradley Cooper was in it at one point. I don't know if he's in this one, but he was in a lot.
No, they replace him... with Adam Scott in this one, playing the same character, and they basically say he got a nose job, you know, and so, that's why he looks different. You know?
More of your weirdness right there.
So it's very weird stuff like that, yeah.
All right, my streaming online pick is The Defiant Ones, the documentary on HBO right now running, chronicling Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre's concurrent lifestyles and musical aspirations, and how they teamed up to become multi-billionaires after the sale of Beats to iTunes to Apple for really use with iTunes. And really the whole career there, you have the retelling basically of the Straight Outta Compton story on the Dre side. And then the Jimmy Iovine side is a really interesting stuff, because it's all about Bruce Springsteen, Tom Petty, Stevie Nicks, working, you know, with these huge personalities, John Lennon, and and then how he became involved with the gangster rap era. And then you have the Tupac situation and the Death Row Records. And it's just really fascinating television. Four-part documentary series, absolutely worth a watch on HBO. That's what I think.
All right.
Let's do trailers. Let's get into this situation.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay.
We're running long, guys. Sorry. We haven't been on the air for 2 months. We're a little rusty. We won't be that long.
But not that long.
Let's get into Suburbicon.
Okay, get into it.
Let's step inside
Matt Damon.
I'd rather not. I think not enough room in there. George Clooney writing and directing along with the Coen brothers on the writing side there. And I think that this looks totally suited to everyone involved, strong suit, from Damon in the lead role there to director Clooney and writers Coen brothers. What do you think?
Yeah, it feels like a Matt Damon movie, feels like a Coen Brothers movie, and it feels like a George Clooney movie. So I'm going to agree with you completely there. I don't know if this is the best work that all these guys have done, but it certainly looks interesting.
Absolutely. And I like that this is when this started, I thought, oh, wow, this is going to be some sort of satirical take on something. And it's going to be that satirical take, but it's going to be a way darker satirical take than what I thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah, which seems to be going around lately.
Yeah, I mean, including the next trailer, let's talk about Death Wish, which is the remake of the 1974 film with Charles Bronson. That spawned four sequels. I think they made five of them in total. Obviously, they were shit outside the first one. I mean, if you ever seen part two and three specifically, they were terrible.
Still fun because they're so bad.
Part two is really hard to get through. I mean, it's really nihilistic. And those movies, around part four, they started getting fun again when he brought out like the double bazooka, you know, and Cannon got a hold of him. I guess they were always Cannon, but I think part four and five are kind of goofy and almost an homage to how crazy the first ones were.
Yeah.
But the
first one looks fantastic.
This looks great. Why does this look so fucking good?
Well, I think because Eli Roth is directing, and so you get this horror aspect, at least a movie that's willing to go into that rated R territory, but still, you know, Eli Roth is a quirky guy, so it's still quirky, it's still fun, it's still Bruce Willis being Bruce Willis, and the good Bruce Willis, you know, so he's kind of got that wry smile, you know, on his face and stuff when he's thinking about stuff, and yeah, so he's, but he gets serious, you know, he'll have that stone hard look on his face when he's gonna kill people and stuff, but when he's talking about it with people, you know, it's fun, jokey. So it's definitely a roller coaster in that sense, and just the cast is fucking great.
I just wonder if this can be a hit in this in these times with you know.
It'll be a hit with me, and that's what I'm happy with.
But this could be a hit, and this could spawn an equalizer. It couldn't cost
very much. I mean, that's the other thing, right? It's whatever this takes to be a hit. This is MGM fucking. I mean, shit. When I saw that logo, I thought, oh my god.
MGM still around?
yeah, so this couldn't have cost that much. So I wouldn't imagine it has to make much back, right?
I just know that this, with Eli Roth behind the camera, it is going to be extremely gruesome in the rape and murder scenes of the wife and daughter. I think that's going to be uncomfortable, and it's going to be so
it'll be fantastic
within its limitations that it'll make you root for Willis.
And that's really what needs to happen, right? I mean, even watching this trailer, you don't necessarily get that sense in this because, you know, they can't really show it or anything. But when he's killing people, it's like, fuck, like you're just it almost feels like he's just killing people at this point in this trailer. It doesn't feel motivated enough yet.
No, which is even scarier. Yeah. Especially when he shoots the drug dealer there at the end there, guy sitting down. I love that
scene. Yeah, the ice cream man or whatever.
And if this trailer's cut beautifully with the AC/DC song and just well done. Let's talk about Gunshy. Antonio Banderas and Simon West getting together to do a film that looks like Rock the Casbah meets Scott Adkins Adventure. What is this? Is Banderas not, first of all, this is pre-TRT, and is he not miscast in this fucking movie? This is, I mean, my amusement, this could be an amusing movie.
Well, it's a Simon West movie. Well, I mean, that's for damn sure.
it doesn't bode well that they have a different actor doing the voiceover for Banderas, a la Steven Seagal. Did you notice that?
No, I don't know. Are you sure about that?
On the voiceover for the trailer, it's not Banderas talking, but he's talking about Banderas in the first person.
I don't know.
What do you think?
I didn't think that, but he's
an aging rock star. His wife gets kidnapped. I mean,
yeah, this looks too silly and stupid. I mean, this is coming out in theaters?
No, I think this comes straight to DVD.
Can't, right?
Yeah, no.
That's what I was going to say. Like, there's just no way, right? If this came out in theaters, I'd be blown away.
I can see it.
Probably. I mean, to be honest with you, no, but I think this just looks, you know, I'm not a huge Simon West fan because this is the kind of crap that he makes, you know?
I like Simon West, but he has made some straight-to-DVD stuff recently. Stolen with Nicolas Cage, Wild Card with Jason Statham, which I think, curiously, they left that off the marquee of his name there. All the titles during this, the director of Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, and The Mechanic, and Expendables 2.
Yeah, thank God, you know.
Theatrical releases, yeah, and those are all to varying degrees. But
yeah, I'm just
not interested in this one. I would say check out the trailer for that.
I'll watch it on video. You know, I don't think I'd have a problem watching this.
I wish this was on video. Streaming. That's what it should be on. This should come out in 1991 on video.
Yeah.
With like,
I don't really have a problem with it. But it certainly is nothing worth anything. It's not going to push anyone's career down the line here.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't sink it, it's all they're hoping. Let's talk about Losing Vincent. This is a very...
Loving.
I'm sorry, yeah, Loving Vincent. My bad.
Yeah,
Vincent Van Gogh.
Although it seems like they lose him.
It's a biopic about Vincent Van Gogh done with the style of his artwork, and that is the first quote-unquote
like,
oil painting film.
It feels almost like he's the most interesting man in the world.
It feels to me like Walking Life or Waking Life, I should say.
Oh, yes, of course. That's what it...
And a little film called Rita and Chico. That had to be a whole different one, Rico and Cheetah. That's the one I watch by myself when no one's around. Mm. But... Cheetah, oh, Jesus Christ, Chico and Rita is a Cuban film, an animated film that won an Oscar a couple years back, and that has the similar style to this. It wasn't oil painted, but this looks visually pleasing, but I was kind of already done with it while the trailer was still going. Were you into this at all?
I don't see a plot in this. I still don't even understand what's going on and what's the movie about. I have no idea. Who's the main character?
Yeah, this is going to be an experiment in visual.
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. It seems awfully boring to me, and I don't know. I'm not really a fan of this type of animation, you know, because it jitters around at times, and it just, I don't know, it bothers my eyes, I guess. It's hard to, like, look at the details of it and take it in when it's just so coarse, you know. And I get that it's, like, his paintings and stuff, but... I mean, come on. So that's, you know, art or gimmick, you know?
I think that that line was skirted with Waking Life and A Scanner Darkly, really, specifically, because those are really well done. And they have a gimmicky, you know, thing with the whole...
Well, Scanner Darkly at least had more stabilized animation to it. Waking Life, I don't know, was a little weirder, kind of like this and some stuff.
It was a little sloppier in that it like kind of was drippy. It was all over the place. It kind of felt like it's falling off the frame.
But it was meant to. So I guess if this supports the story, which I don't know what the hell it is, then it would be fine. But I don't know.
All right, let's talk about the Lega Ninjago movie.
The Lega Ninjago.
I also
like that you said Sharknado earlier. That's
I always call that fucking thing Sharknado. I don't know what the fuck. It's like Sharknado. A tornado and a Sharknado in one. But let's call
Anyhow.
It the Lego Ninjago movie.
The Leganado movie here.
I saw Lego Batman, which I didn't give a review on, but I found it pretty damn amusing. But my problem with it is I was done with it before it was done with me. And this trailer I have the same problem with.
That good. Really? This, I think, looks back on track for the Lego stuff. The Batman thing I felt a little off. But this looks... I don't know, funny and fun again.
I agree. And then it kept going and going and going. And I thought, man, I'm kind of done with this trailer already. And the movie's not even going yet. So
I liked it.
But, These are good, though, for sure. Animated kids films, these have now done a good job at reaching out to our demographic as well as appealing to the kids. So, you know, I'm not really all that interested in seeing a Despicable Me or a Minion movie or even Cars, for that matter. But I will catch a Lego Batman movie or the Ninjago movie because the humor in that is it's actually meant for us, I kind of feel. You know, they was that whole bar was established by the Philip and Chris Lord, you know, and their sensibilities have seemed to have translated throughout this whole universe that they're setting up here with the Lego movies.
Yeah, no, I like this. I was surprised that I would even be interested in a Lego Ninjago movie. Lego. God, now you got me doing it.
I know. I think you said Lego right there.
I did. Now, that's what I'm saying. Join the club. I'm in. I'm all in.
It's
Lego. All
right. They were the generic ones. I couldn't afford Legos. It's cool.
Go, can I get me one of them tickets for that Lego movie? Like them Legos.
Seriously. Next to Rita and Chica.
She got them animation movies. All right. So, Borg McEnroe. There was what was the other tennis one? This Battle of the Sexes, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is more of a
recently
comedy,
saw, which obviously, really to me didn't look very good or intriguing. I don't know on any level. So let me ask you this: why the fuck does this movie look so good? Is it just because me?
This movie looks like Rush, but with tennis. Remember Rush with Chris Hemsworth?
Why am I excited about tennis? I mean, I'm not, but I'm really excited about these guys. Like, I don't know, Shia LaBeouf and this, I'm not even going to say his name, but this Swedish guy, I guess Borg, McEnroe and Borg, and we'll call him, right? But the performances in this are so, like, intense. And it just, and the whole movie just feels like, oh my God. I mean, it feels like they're about to go into a boxing ring or something, right? It's just
it
like,
feels like a
whoa.
Political thriller from the 70s. Like, what is going on here?
I'm just
and
like,
oh,
my
just
God.
A tennis match?
Yeah. It's like, wow, this is way more exciting than it should be. I think this looks really good. If it could keep up what is done in the trailer throughout the film, then you know, I don't know. I mean, do you think any awards for this are possible? I'm kind of feeling maybe.
I would think so, but if Shia hasn't shot himself in the foot with his recent actions and this just gets buried because of that. But I also feel like this has a bit of that Ron Howard Rush kind of period sports drama that also has very vivid characters and good acting in it and good filmmaking. This is a very captivating trailer, probably, you know, the best that we have on the show today in terms of filmmaking. And it works. And this is the international trailer we're speaking about. The one I saw, at least, was. I think that's the only trailer that's released right now. And even just the way this thing is cut, it looks like it. I mean, it's cliche to say it could be a documentary, but the look of this looks authentic. It doesn't
feels
look like
you're like there.
Trying, yeah. It looks like they were capturing a moment that it was happening in front of them. So. I really am intrigued by this, and I have no interest in tennis or these people.
I thought this was I feel the same way. I thought this was just gonna be boring, but LaBeouf is just
when a kid brings it, the kid brings.
I mean, son of a bitch. Yeah, I mean, there are just moments in this trailer where it's just like, damn, like what the fuck? Get it together, buddy. Because if you can do this kind of shit, like in a fucking Borg McEnroe movie, where the hell you been?
The problem is because he can probably do this kind of shit. So, you know, it's that genius thing. So, but he does look good in this, and this might be the role that breaks him through or gets him some sort of acting accolades. And if he could hold it together, maybe he could have, you know, the career that he was destined to have.
I'm sure he's going to knock this Swedish guy out as well.
He probably already did. He probably headbutted this fucker on set. Because, you know, he had to be in character.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, this is, I think, the strongest trailer on the show. What do you think?
I mean, by far. I think this is the one. I mean, this is the kind of thing when I see that's like, I don't know, I'm not even thinking about movies. I'm just totally inside of this fucking trailer and just really want to see it. So, I don't know.
Oh, we recommend that trailer. We're recommending Dunkirk, and Trevor is recommending Colossal. Otherwise, Sharknado. I caught that from the Lego. And we cannot recommend that with all intentions, but we have to say that's a great guilty
pleasure.
But we
do. But we do anyways.
We can't help it. but otherwise, it's been a pretty dreary summer at the movies. But we'll be back with you guys next week with another episode of the Movie Mavericks podcast. We want to thank you guys for hanging in with us. We'll be back on track with these episodes now that the summer has ended, and coming at you with a couple new retro podcasts as well. So keep your ears open. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!